City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
Hi, this is Dean Sullivan. Thanks for taking the time, trouble and effort to download Dino's Download. There you go. Joining me now, my producer, JJ. What a week we've had.
Hello. God, it's weird to think that we are sitting in someone's ear hole right now, isn't it?
Well,
do you
know
what I mean?
I'm sure they're enjoying it, aren't they?
Oh, they must be.
Well, if they're taking the trouble to download us, you know.
Who else has got Jimmy Corkill down the rear?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Can't be bad.
No, we've had a good week. It's been a really good one. We've had some big superstars on the show.
We have. Well, I was chatting exclusively to Candy Staton, of course. I couldn't believe we had her.
Bit of a disco diva.
Definitely. And you were telling me, because you know, you're more on the scene than I am, you know, they're down there on the dance floor. They're still playing that big hit of hers, aren't they?
Do you know what? She's got one big, massive, giant hit, You Got the Love. And
from
it's
years
still
ago.
Massive.
From years and years ago.
Brilliant. But we played over on our sister station, Radio City.
Excellent.
So when I heard we had it, I was chuffed. So Candy Staton is coming up on this download.
Excellent, excellent. Also as well, Simon West, an old mate of mine, Simon. I've known him for quite a few years. Of course, married to a lovely Scouse girl. Lives down in Cardiff now. But he's heading up this anti-hatred campaign. So we talked to him on Holocaust Memorial Day.
We did on Holocaust Memorial Day. But it was good to speak to him to hear about some of the persecution that he's had in his life. Because, you know, you wouldn't think it. He's obviously got really bad scars from what happened to him in the Falklands. And that's why he's heading this campaign up.
You'll hear him telling stories. One example he gave of people, they were lining people up, queuing people up to have a look at him.
Unbelievable.
In a restaurant.
Yeah. So it was good to catch up with Simon Weston. And we had another legend on, a bit of a nature legend, David Bellamy.
Dr. David Bellamy, indeed. Yeah, talking about that fantastic project that's coming to Chester Zoo. And talking of another big.
Are we talking big literally?
Oh, big!
Or big voiced?
Big.
Big, you know, on the old bad language, anyway.
Yeah, big in every way. We had her talking exclusively, got to tell you, exclusively to... I was the only one, she says this in the interview, I'm the only one that she's given an interview to since she came out of the Big Brother house. She's probably given a load more now.
Well, I heard her on a few radio stations last week.
Did
you? I think we spoke to her first.
Oh, we spoke to her first.
Yes,
yeah,
I think so.
We had her first, that's what she said. Tina Malone I'm talking about, of course. Giving us her take on why she swore so much in the Big House.
Yes, Big Brother House, because a few people weren't so happy with it. And as well, she gave us some exclusive news on the day that the story broke, that the possibility was out there that it could have been a fix.
Absolutely.
Eureka Johnson winning. She told us her thoughts on that, so it's interesting.
More on that later. So loads coming up on the download.
And you can get it every single week right here on citytalk.fm. Should we start with Tina Malone?
Or iTunes.
Or iTunes, the iTunes store. That's the one.
Let's start with Tina.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
There you go. I can only be talking about one person in particular. She's a lady. Tina Malone joins me on the line now. Tina, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Dean? And Happy
Good.
New Year.
Happy New Year to you, my darling. Have they had you holed up in a hotel till it was all over?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, yeah. I mean, when you first come out, you know, you have to see the execs and the psychologists and everything else. And I think they were kind of quite surprised how lucid I was. But since then, I've done a TV show every single day.
Have you? So, I saw you last night.
Oh, on the Sunday Night Project, did you see it?
Your hair was looking very glamorous. Was that a little bit
Thank
of,
you.
A couple of additions there, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Well, when I found out every single girl in the house had extensions and false eyelashes, I thought, God, no wonder I'm walking around looking like a troll.
So you thought you'd join them?
I had it done in London last week and... you know, I've probably made more money, Dean, in the last week being out than I've made in 2 years.
Really?
So, I mean, I came out at a great time because I wasn't kind of, I came out on my own. So I didn't have to share all the publicity or the deals. And I've had some great deals, the best being there, lots of offers of surgery free.
Oh, wow.
So it worked wearing three cardigans and two dressing gowns.
So were you surprised at your early eviction? Were you expecting to go so early?
Yes, absolutely. You've got to remember, I mean, on the Sunday night, myself and Mutty had gone in and said we were going to walk previous to me going on the Friday. And I was desperate to be evicted. And you're basically... very aware that, and I was aware the biggest thing I could do to get out would be to swear a lot. And so that was the use of expletives. You know me well, Dean. We've been friends 15 years.
Yep.
And I can be prone to, you know, using bad language, but not to to the excess that I did.
Can I just stop you for one? Can I just stop you there, Tina, for 1 second? Because I just want, just so that you know, we've just got this on standby. Have a listen. Have another listen. Just in case, so you know, if you want to feel as if you're still in the Celebrity Big Brother house, feel free.
No.
So what are you saying, Tina? It was a deliberate policy on your part to swear to excess.
Oh God! In the last 3 days, yeah, absolutely. Because I knew it was the only way of getting me out. The viler I was, the more you would be taken out. And it was funny, really, because I don't know whether you saw the eviction night, but the screams for me and the websites apparently that have been set up saying, keep Tina in, and I was like, oh my God, no. I was desperate to get out, absolutely. And me and Mutty had both said, if you go, I'm going. And I'd said to Ulrika, you must stay. Because
I predicted from day one that she'd win it.
Oh, good, oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I came away, Dean, with a lot of money. Don't believe what you read in the press. Mm. I wouldn't go. I wouldn't have stayed for a week for 30, 40 grand. Right. And that's on the grave of my father. But, you know, I thought it was a unique experience. I'm not unemployed. I'm doing a film in March. Then I've got 9 months back in Shameless.
And, of course, it starts off again tomorrow, doesn't it, Shameless?
Yeah. Yeah, the new series is on tomorrow, but we start filming the next series in April. But I kind of felt, you know, people expect you to be the loud, gobby, fat, funny scouse bird. And I have heard, funnily enough, that, you know, there have been criticism by some kind of, some very blue comics in Liverpool, surprisingly enough, putting me down. But I'm fiercely patriotic as well, you know. And, you know, I'm sorry that I embarrassed my mother, but that's all I am sorry about. I don't regret anything. I had an incredible time. I'm a highly articulate, intelligent woman. I don't need to use expletives. I'm still a teacher. And, you know, I did it to purely get out. You've got to remember, at the end of the day, it's a game show. That's all it is. I came away with three very good friends. Obviously, I've spoken every day to Latoya and Ulrika and Mutia, and I've kept in contact with them. And you know, that's just the way it is. I'm seeing Latoya tomorrow. I've stayed at Mutia's a couple of times. And, you know, I that's a bonus. Making three good, very good female friends is a bonus.
Just to go back to the swearing thing, too, only because I did get a lot of emails and messages into the station about it. It was obviously going to cause some sort of controversy.
Yeah.
One letter I've got in front of me here now, which was actually printed in the, I think it was in the Daily Post or in the Echo, a very short letter. It says, thank goodness Tina Malone was booted out of Celebrity Big Brother early. She made me ashamed to come from Liverpool.
Yeah.
How do you react to things like that?
Well, you know, you for every
must hurt you.
No, not in the slightest. For every letter of obvious complaint, you know, or kind of every negative attitude, you get 100 to, you know, 1,000 positives. I know, and I spoke on the one show on Sunday. I do realise that, you know, if you If you use, I'm not condoning the use of bad language, but like I said on the one show on the BBC the other night, you know, a rose by any other name is still a sweet. So if we suddenly called roses sugar plums, they'd still be roses. You know, Shakespeare wrote 400 years ago and used old language, which was original language, and people were confused with that. Because we have expletives or bad language, as we call it, when it's used in a hostile, aggressive way and out of certain contexts, yet it isn't acceptable. It isn't acceptable in everyday life with young people, old people. But you have to look at the context of the programme I was in. And what you're kind of trying, it's not about trying to portray me. As long as the people who know me, my family and my friends, love me and care for me, I really have no kind of, I'm not annoyed by people's reactions. I understand people's reactions. But, you know, you can always switch off.
True. Did you think it would cause so much controversy?
Yeah, particularly in my own city, yeah, because Liverpool, as much as I am fiercely patriotic as well, you know, Liverpool's a city that loves to build you up and pull you down. And there'll always be two or three in the background who are waiting to be negative about you in any way.
Now, what was it like being in that house, being under, you know, such intense scrutiny?
Yeah, it's, do you know what, Dean? I'd have to spend a couple of days with you to tell you. It's the most... It's one of the strangest experiences of my life, and I've had strange experiences. But it's so bizarre. And what's the most bizarre thing is that nothing is familiar to you. You have nothing that is your own. You know, whether it's... I have my rosary, and I have, you know, my dad's rosary. I had bracelets. I have my own clothes. But not only do you not have televisions and phones and radios, you have no writing paraphernalia, no pens, no crayons, nothing to read. I mean, even, you know, your creams and stuff like that are taped over. So you can't even sit in the bathroom and read, the back of your shampoo over and over again.
And you literally have absolutely no contact with the outside world whatsoever?
None at all.
And do you see anybody else apart from your housemates? Do you ever see any
of
the producers or researchers?
No, I believe they do in the jungle. But no, we don't. Even if even if you need to see a doctor because you've got a cough or if you're feeling a bit kind of bunged up, shall we say, with the bad food, you speak to the diary room and they speak to the doctor and they come back and tell you what the doctor's suggested. And you go out and they leave the tablets on the chair.
Now, who wound you up the most while you were in there? Anyone?
Well, you know, Coolio's like a little boy. He's a game player. You have to remember, he's done about 10 of these shows, Dean.
Oh, really?
I was kind of like a reality show virgin.
Yeah.
Every single other person in there had done them, bar Mutia. So it was totally new to me and him. We were totally thrown. But, the most annoying person for me, and still is and still was Michelle. Because she has nothing else in her life.
She did a lot of crying, didn't she?
Yeah, phony crying. But
really?
She's nothing else going on in her life. You know, even if you're unemployed, Dean, you sit down and write, you know yourself. If you're talented, you're talented. Doesn't matter whether you've got a job or you haven't. You go home and write something, whether it be poetry, whether it be a play, whether it be a short story, whether it be an idea or a treatment. You can't take people's talent away. You can take their money away and their jobs, but you can't take... She has nothing other than she's self-obsessed totally and utterly. And yet somebody like Lucy, who's gorgeous and obviously makes a living, you know, taking a bra off, fair play to her. I would if I looked like her. I mean, she's a highly intelligent girl. And like she said, you know, when my two particular assets drop, I can go to university when I'm 27, 28 and I've banked a few hundred thousand.
Do you think you need to be a strong personality to survive in the house?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. I think you need to be... As in, the biggest asset you can have going into something like that is to had done it before, and they all had all over the world, you know. And also, it was probably the strangest group of men I've ever come across in my life.
Really?
Ever, yeah.
And what about what about the stories today in the papers today, Tina, that it was all just one big fix? Was it? Was it a fix?
Well, how would I know? I mean, I've not seen any papers today, to be honest. I've just been with my doctor this morning because I'm not well and I'm off to do a BBC interview now. So you're the only person I've actually I've agreed to speak to today.
Right. Well, thanks
and
for
you
that.
Are, that's because, well, no, no big deal, but just because you're a friend, you know. I'm kind of inundated, as you can imagine, from Belfast to London with, you know, Spin FM to this other, you know, everybody wants to speak to you, and I've done some great deals, but I wouldn't know, Dean. I would say it's not. That's my own personal opinion, but the only thing I can verify is what you see is what you get. I mean, they didn't show the full day of drama I did where they split the house into two teams,
right.
Mixed, and I had people like LaToya Jackson and Lucy Pinder doing sketches, you know, the drama stuff we used to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was absolutely hysterical, but, you know...
What about Ulrika, then? What about Ulrika? Do you think she deserved to win in the end?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean, because, you know... It's easy in this business, isn't it, for people to throw criticism at you for whatever you do. Mm. You know, she left her four babies. She's met, you know, she's got four children she's got to send to university one day. And, you know, she's a seasoned journalist and presenter. And she has very strong views like you do, like I do. But, you know, you have to get on with somebody on your level and take them for how they are with you. She's incredibly genuine. I mean, unbelievably genuine. She's a loving mother, a loving husband, and she's had a bad time with some, you know, she's made mistakes like we all have with men, but, you know, in our lives, us girlies, but, you know, she's incredibly strong and very tough and very intelligent, and I just like that she doesn't look down her nose at anybody at all. She really doesn't. And the same with LaToya. LaToya didn't kind of really, she's incredibly shy, but she's not as fragile as everybody thinks. And, you know, we've become very close friends, strangely enough, do you know what I mean?
A strange combination.
I know, me and a Jackson.
Now, look,
the
you're...
The funniest thing... Go on.
No, I was just going to say, your Danielle was on the show a couple of times while you were in the house. In fact, I don't know, I don't think you will have known this because I don't think she got to speak to you, but I bumped into her in Williamson Square. And she said to me, I think you'd already gone, and she said to me, oh, my mum's gone to America to do a film, and but have you seen her in the papers about Big Brother? There's no way she's going into Big Brother. So I said, well, you try ringing her on Friday. I said, if you can't get through, she's in that house. Sure enough, you were you reunited with her when you were evicted, her and your mum?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yep. Not my mum. My mum didn't travel to London, but my family and friends did. And, I mean, I think the hardest thing of it all was I've had the most incredible support from friends of mine, from like Annabelle Apsey and Tamika. The most incredible support, and people have said you were incredible and amazing and whatever, and very funny. I think my mum and my daughter, and I suppose you have to realise it's much more personal for them, they were mortified. My mother wasn't happy, obviously, with some of the stuff I said. She's a real lady. But, you know, it's a game show. And, you know, whilst I was genuine and honest and real, you ham everything up because I particularly wanted to get out, Dean.
Well, Tina, you know, there's loads more to talk about. Will you come on the show next time you're in Liverpool?
When I'm back in 2 weeks.
Brilliant.
And I will only come on to speak to you.
Well, we'd love to have you in the studio.
And thank you for asking to speak to me, darling.
Oh, no, my
pleasure.
Hope
you're well. Are you good?
I am. Yeah, everything's great. Everything's fine and dandy.
All right, we'll have to have lunch. And
we will do. We'll catch up.
All right, gorgeous.
Thanks, Tina. See you later.
All right, take care. Bye.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was our very own Tina Malone. Oh, Celebrity Big Brother. Nothing like it. Nothing like it. Lots more to come on City Talk 105.9.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
Making the news headlines. In fact, it was on the front page of the Liverpool Daily Post today. Chester Zoo is today unveiling an ambitious £225 million scheme to create an Eden project for the north. A unique biodome recreating an African rainforest complete with plants and animals from the continent will form part of a £90 million first phase, which will also include a 90-bed hotel. Commercial director of the zoo, David Titmus, last night predicted the domed ecosystem around the size of Wembley Stadium would be a major boost for the northwest economy. Joining me on the line now to talk about this is none other than David Bellamy. Good afternoon, David.
Hello, what fantastic news.
Welcome news for Chester Zoo, yes?
Well, welcome news for the world, because Chester Zoo's one the great ones which it does things about conserving the animals of the world. And, of course, to showcase Africa is amazing, because Africa's the only continent that still has most of its big game there in viable things, and they need help, and they need patting on the back, and so does Chester Zoo. Wow!
And are creatures and species in Africa then in danger of becoming extinct?
Oh yes, I mean, you know, if we went back to the times, the great white hunters and things, there were millions and millions of animals, and I'm afraid development for farming and for other things has eroded into this, and the numbers have gone down and down, but we can still say that the vast majority of their big hairies, you know, the elephants and the other things, are still there in viable numbers. and a certain amount of culling has to go on just to keep them away from the new development. But to actually showcase this, you see, to me, the first people in the world arrived, in Africa, and they lived along beside the big game, and that was their food source. And we really should pat Africa on the back for the conservation they have done over the last number of years. We need a showcase, and what better place to do it than in one of my favourite zoos, Cheshire. I used to advertise on the buses for them, say, come to Chester Zoo with a picture of me. I looked a bit like Orang Utan in those days.
I remember that campaign, actually, yes. Now, how important is conservation, though, David?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've had a credit crunch, but the real crunch which is hurting the world is the biodiversity crunch, because more and more animals and plants are going to the wall of extinction simply because, think of the biodiesel scare. Here we are now seeing biodiesel, it's using up land where our wildlife still lives. It's using up land where people in Africa actually grow their food. So biodiesel is very, very bad news. It trashes or crashes biodiversity and doesn't do the world. If we don't have great chunks of the world in working order, we've got even more problems of natural climate change.
Would you say it's all man's fault, all mankind's fault, David, or are there other factors involved?
Well, certainly global warming isn't mankind's fault at all. The main problem there, we've had the internal combustion engine now for almost 80 years, and that destroys. And I've been campaigning all the way around the world. I probably sat on more picket lines to stop the destruction of the biodiversity of the world. I used to call it natural history. And it is very, very important to show people that we are not only part of the problem, but we are the main part of solving it. And the more people who can go into this wonderful, wonderful zoo and find out that they're part of the problem, but they're also part of the answer, then, perhaps I can think of retiring. Perhaps I can retire in Chester.
I'm talking to my special guest, David Bellamy, about Chester Zoo's new ambitious scheme. What exactly will go on there, David, when it's fully completed?
Well, I mean, if you go down to, the Eden project, it's all plants, and I love it. But, some of the youngsters get a bit fed up with it after, half an hour, and they go and play football outside or go skating on their outdoor skating rink. But once you have got the animals in there, and they're going to be done to perfection because, Chester Zoo has led the way in doing certain things. And that is going to link up with many, many other of our good zoos. Thank God our bad zoos have been closed down now. And we've got good news at zoos, and they're all linked up, and they know exactly where the most endangered species of animals are, and they are breeding. And when they breed the things to keep the genetic diversity up, they get animals from zoos as far away who've collected the genetic material. So, gee, we don't get any good news these days. Okay, the credit crunch, but the good news is that most people are now looking at this world and say, we depend on this world totally, and we depend on biodiversity, and let's stitch our world back into working order. And I went around the world four times last year, and wherever I go, I meet people who are fed up, sick and tired that the values and things their parents and grandparents took for granted are disappearing, and they're doing something about it. Everyone is, and I could make a new television program every day giving you good news about the world of biodiversity, because we've come to our senses at last.
Well, it's certainly good news for Chester Zoo. David Bellamy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's David Bellamy talking about Chester Zoo's new ambitious plan to create an Eden project for the North.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
Well, that certainly brings back the memories, putting her spirit and soul into her singing and investing her songs with intensity and panache. It's a truly masterful performer with an uplifting catalogue. Of course it is. Has to be the legend that is Candy Staton. Good afternoon, Candy.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well indeed. You're coming to Liverpool, coming to the Philharmonic Hall in February, not too far off.
Can't wait. It's going to be so exciting.
Have you played Liverpool before, been to Liverpool before to play here?
Never.
Wow.
This will be my first trip.
Well, I hope you're in for a pleasant surprise.
I sure am.
So are you touring around the country at the moment?
Yes, I am. We're promoting the new CD that's just being released in Europe right now.
Okay, and what's
it? It's called Who's Hurting Now.
Okay.
And it should be out the 1st of February. I'll do a few, you know, maybe two songs or so from the CD, but it's a great CD, and we're promoting that.
Excellent. Do you enjoy touring around then, Candy?
Yeah, it's better than sitting at home watching soap operas.
Okay. And where is home?
Yeah, home is in Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Oh, okay, so you're a long way from home then, yeah?
Oh, I will be, yeah.
And so when this tour kicks off, how long will you be on the road for?
I'm doing 14 dates.
Okay.
And I think in 15 dates. And I'll be there from the 1st of February, along with promoting and the music as well, but I'll be there from the 1st of February to the 1st of March. So I'll be in your country for a complete month.
Well, we would look forward to that, and as I say, coming to Liverpool on the 20th of February. What is it about, you know, something like Young Hearts? Where did that song come from?
You know what? That song came from an experience. It came from an experience. David Crawford, who is the writer and the producer of the song, followed me during the time of, I was going through some very difficult times. And I had a husband, I made a wrong choice selecting a husband, and he was more of like a pimp, you know. He was just not a real good person. And I was trying to get away from him, and I couldn't get away from him because he kept threatening my life. And I would talk to David a lot about it. I used to just talk to him a lot. We would have lunch and stuff, and I would talk to him. And he said, wow, that is incredible. But I noticed he was writing down words on a piece of paper. And he was just putting all this stuff down as though he was doing an interview on me. And then he said, there's a song I got for you. He said, I'm going to write you a song. And he just kept saying that, and then he said, I'm going to write you a song that's going to last forever. And when we came into the session, he brought out Young Hearts Run Free, and I was absolutely just, oh, man, I was floored because the music was so pretty. I'd never heard anything like that. No one had ever done a track like that for me. And it was just, I almost cried when I heard the song because it fit my whole situation. And that's why I sung it one time, and it was on the. And that's the way you hear it now. That's how I did it.
Well, it's a fantastic song, and it's enduring. It's endured all these years, hasn't it?
Yes, it
has. How long are we talking about when that first came out?
We're talking about the early 70s.
Yeah, that's amazing that it's still relevant today.
Yeah, it is. And each generation can identify with it because every generation, you know, every young person comes along, and they've got to learn the hard way. You know, mama tell them, my mom told me not to mess with this guy here. But I did it anyway. So look at what we've got here. We've got some babies, and now he's running around on me, and I never can keep up with him. Now I'm home changing diapers and don't know where he is. So Young Hearts Run Free and never be hung up like this.
Well, it's good advice, yes. So who were your early influences then, Candy?
My influences?
Yeah.
Mahalia Jackson.
Who did you used to look up to from singing-wise?
Mahalia Jackson.
Yeah, oh, right, okay, yeah, brilliant.
And B.B. King.
Yeah.
Aretha Franklin. Strange as it might seem, the Blind Boys. Those guys, you know, I always had this little feeling for the quartet feel. You know, I like the quartet singing. And when we had the group, when we were children, we had a group that traveled with all these people. Sam Cooke was there, and we all, you know, we kind of wanted to sing like the quartets more than we did the female singers. And our group was a quartet type of a female group. We were kids, but we loved the genre of music the quartets did. And so that was a big influence as well.
I'm talking to Candy Staton ahead of her gig at the Liverpool Philharmonic Hall coming up in February. So, Candy, was music always a big part of your life from, you know, an early age?
Yes, it was. That's the only thing that I really enjoyed growing up was music. I guess maybe you've heard this somewhere, but we were very, very poor family growing up in Alabama. And there was absolutely nothing in our house. You know, it was chores we had to do all the time.
Was it a big family? Did you have lots of brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I had six. It was six of us in all. And we had chores to do all the time. And we, you know, there was no television back in that day. And I guess that might sound strange to some of our generations now. No TV? You got to be kidding. But we had no TV and barely had a radio. And what the radio we did have, we would, after the chores were done in the evening, we'd sit around the radio and listen to music. This was the highlight of the day. We had to get home so we could finish doing all our stuff so we could hear the radio. And that was, we'd get our bath and we would listen to the radio. And then we started to mimic in the songs from the radio. And we would learn the songs from the radio. Even the country, it didn't matter what music it was. We were not even prejudiced to music. Country was sounded good. Rhythm and blues sounded good. Gospel was great. You know, anything that had music in it, we wanted to be there. We wanted to sing it. And I think that's maybe the reason I have a little country in me, because of how I grew up with the country music.
And how did you break into the music business?
I broke in the music business not by choice, but by chance. In 1969. My husband and I had separated. We had divorced, and I was left with four children. And I knew I could sing, but I didn't think of my singing as a career. I would go out and make a living. Quite honestly, I thought I was too old to get started in a music career after four children. And I was kind of pushed in that direction because there was no income. I didn't know how I would support the children, because my husband left me with four children. And there I was. I wasn't as educated as my sister. She had a master's degree in education, and I'm home having kids. And now I don't know what to do. I was so frustrated. So my brother began to take me to nightclubs and let me sing. And that's how I met Clarence Carter, and he hired me to go on the road with him. And he took me to his producer, Rick Hall, in Muscle Shoals, and the rest is history.
Has it been a long career?
Oh, yeah. It's been a wonderful career.
And when you look back on it, what are some of the highlights?
Oh, my goodness. Going to the White House several times with Jimmy Carter and Clinton, President Clinton. I did that. I've also, the Palladium was one of the highlights that I did with the Stylistics. I still remember that. I'm a people person, and I like being around people, and I love making people happy, and I love smiles, and I love to see people come into the concerts looking down, and when they leave, they're jumping up and down, you know, with their hands up in the air and all that good stuff. So, I mean, those are the highlights of my life, just living to give.
And have you had a chance to meet Barack Obama yet?
Have I had a chance to do what?
Meet with your new president, Barack Obama.
No, you know what? I have this feeling. One of these days I will.
I'm sure you will. I've got to tell you, you know, one of your tunes, You've Got the Love, is still popular today. Dance, you know, I'm thinking about a dance tune in the clubs.
Yes, I know.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel great. It makes me feel wonderful. You know what I do, even on a personal basis, when I get up in the morning and I feel a little down, here at my home, alone, I live, you know, I'm a single I'm a single lady. Mm-hmm. So I live here, and I'm like, I get up in the morning, and I'm feeling down. All these things are coming at me. And I'm like, oh, man, what am I going to do with this one? And what, oh, I got to do all this. First thing I think about, sometimes I feel like throwing my hands up in the air. I know I can count on you. And I'm like, oh, that's it. And before you know it, I'm up.
Sounds great.
I'm up doing my stuff.
We're all going to be feeling good because we're going to play out on that one. Candy Staddon, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Oh, it's been great.
And have a great time when you come to Liverpool.
I sure will. I hope to see all of you guys there. We're going to have a great time.
That's Candy Staddon.
Sometimes I feel like throwing my hands up in the air. I know I can count on you. Sometimes I feel like saying, Lord, I just don't care. But you've got the love I need to see me through.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
Stop the Hatred campaign is in the news. The campaign is the product of Holocaust Memorial Day, which, since its inception in 2001, is marked annually on January the 27th. Today, the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz concentration camp by the Soviet Union in 1945. Heading up the campaign is Simon Weston. Good afternoon, Simon.
Good afternoon, mate. How are you doing?
Very well indeed. Nice to talk to you again. How did you get involved in this campaign, Simon?
I'm not terribly sure how I got involved in it, but very pleased and proud to become involved. It's something I believe in. I think it's something that most right-thinking people believe in, that, you know, we shouldn't have this sort of bile tucked up in our stomachs, sort of wanting to hate people just because of the way they look, their history, because of perceptions. You know, if you dislike somebody, make sure it's because of what you know rather than what you think or you feel. You know, it should be a real genuine issue rather than something that's perceived.
Absolutely. Well, when we think of the Holocaust, of course, we do remember persecution and ignorance and intolerance and hatred even. And these are some things that you've experienced, haven't you, since your tragic accidents in the Falklands? Tell us a little bit about your experience over in Germany, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange, isn't it? You know, people... they see somebody that looks different, and then they react. Sometimes they react out of stupidity. Sometimes they react out of their sheer ignorance. Sometimes it's a combination of both. But quite often, though, it is always offensive. But yes, you mean it was just that parents ushering children in front of me. You know, the children would obviously walk past me and saw me and obviously asked their mother what had happened or whatever, and the parents were rushing them to go back and have another look. And, you know, it's just sheer ignorance of things like that, you know. But what can you do? You know, people will be what they are, and that's just offensive, you know, and stupid. Now I'm much sort of older and wiser and more able to deal with that in a more controlled way. But it was very, very distressing at the time.
I'm talking to Simon Weston, who's heading up the Stop the Hatred campaign. On today it is, of course, Holocaust Memorial Day. So what exactly does the campaign do, Simon?
Well, it promotes tolerance with people, but it also it's about making people aware of how far sometimes people will go with their intolerance and with their hatred and with their determination to dislike people just because of what they think about them. You know, with the Holocaust Memorial, yes, obviously we're remembering what happened back in the 30s and 40s with the Germans and the Jews. But, you know, the Jews have been persecuted for many, many centuries. But it's not just about them. It's about people in total. You know, it's about remember the Holocaust, because that's how far it can go. That's how bad it can get. And we never want to go there again. But it's also about getting people in our communities, whether you be Welsh, Scottish, English, Irish, whether you be American, whatever part of the world you're from, you know, we need to be more tolerant of each other. And we certainly shouldn't dislike people just because they happen to be of a certain religion, whether they be Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, whether they be Protestant, Muslim, whether they be Jewish. You know, let people fall on their own sword because of who they are and what they do, what they say. Their actions should be the determining factor, not by their history, by nature of birth. It should never be those things. It should always be because people have given you an absolute solid reason, not by what perception and what bile that somebody may be espousing. You know, we have far too many hate groups exist in this world. You know, we don't need other individuals to fall into that trap and follow all the stupid nonsense that goes with it.
It's a great message, Simon, that the campaign has. How important is it to work with young people?
Oh, it's absolutely imperative, because the young people are our tomorrow. They're our only tomorrow. If we don't get it right for now with young people, then we fail tomorrow's society. And we've got to do our best. You know, we've only got to look at the shenanigans that took place. And this had nothing to do with, as far as I'm aware, race, religion or anything else. But you look at what happened at Hull's football ground with Millwall supporters tearing up the ground. And that was out of pure hatred for the fact that these men had lost their game of football. And then they decided to tear up something. They wanted to kill somebody. They wanted to hurt somebody. Now, that just can't be tolerated. And we've got to make sure young people don't see that as being the way to behave, because you can't get your own way, because things don't happen the way you would like them. And that's all that happened there. You know, they couldn't have their own way. They couldn't win the game. So they threw their dummy in the dirt. The teddy bear got thrown out of the pram. And they destroyed things. What step does it take for somebody to carry a knife? And then all of a sudden, because things don't go their way on a night, they end up with an argument, somebody, you know, gets the better of them, then all of a sudden they pull the knife. And that's the deal clincher. You then all of a sudden, you're a murderer. Because whether you like it or not, carrying that knife is one thing, but making the next step and using it can quite easily make you a premeditated murderer, because you carried it out knowing you would use it. And that's all it takes. And we've got to stop all that. And we can only change tomorrow if we start working with young people today. And it's not sort of a pontification. You know, I'm not talking from some highbrow plane where I've never been involved in things. I mean, I was a youngster who grew up in a very tough part of the valleys of South Wales, where poverty and problems were massive. And I've seen an awful lot through my life. And I've seen what can go wrong, and seen what happened in Northern Ireland when you had all this stupidity over Catholic and Protestant, which all came from people wanting desperately just to have parity and equality. And then all of a sudden you had two sides wanting to tear people to pieces. And they actually did do that, as we saw on TV, when two soldiers got caught by a group and were murdered unmercifully. So, you know, we've got to change the way we educate, teach and work with young people, especially around all of these stupid perceptions and gangs and the intolerances that people have towards each other.
Simon, continued success with the campaign. Next time you're in Liverpool, pop up to the top of the tower, come in and see us for the longer chat.
All right, Dean. Cheers, mate. Take care.
Thanks, Simon. That's Simon Weston talking about the Stop the Hatred campaign.
This is The Sullivan Show
with Dean Sullivan
on City Talk 105.9.